We are here talking about an important institution in our community that is within an African American majority community that is literally on the border between some of the poorest neighborhoods of our city and some of the not most affluent neighborhoods, but they neighborhoods that do pretty good. And it is an institution that has been around in this city for many decades and has had a tradition of being free. And you know, anytime you have something that's free and all of a sudden they want to charge, folks get concerned, folks get upset. And this issue has been the biggest, it's been a bigger controversy than Sony and that doggone movie around here. And that is the decision by the Indianapolis Museum of Art, announced literally a week ago, that instead of being free, as they have been for nearly all of their distinguished history in our community, they're going to charge a price that is $1 less than the Children's Museum and higher than the zoo, depending on what day you go to the zoo, because if you go to the zoo today, it's like less than $10 because it's cold and not everybody's going to the zoo today, which may be the best time to go to the zoo. Anyway, in the house is Charles Venable. He is the president and CEO of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Also, my good friend Matt Gutwine, who is a member, they said he's the vice chair. Okay, that and $5 get you something in the IMA cafe. Member of the Board of Governors, which is the ultimate governing board of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Guys, welcome.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, so, thank you very much, Amos, for having us.
So, Charles Venable, what are y'all doing over there? To make a decision, the only other time the museum made a decision like this was about 10 years ago when the admission was free and your predecessor said, hey, let's charge $7. And that lasted slightly less than the Edsel.
But we have charged on and off in different times of our history. We've been around 131 years. That's a long right. time. And institutions change and grow and have different needs over different times. The most recent time, though, that we had a general admission charge and moved away from what we call piecemeal pricing, where you come, you pay for parking, you pay for exhibitions, you pay for programming, mm-hmm. as opposed to buy one ticket, and most of those things are all included. That was in 2005, mm-hmm. and then that went away in 2007. It was originally researched by the board as part of the new expansion. So that was part of their business plan to be able to support all that.
When all the new expansion yes. was built, the Toby and an additional gallery.
Over 200,000 right. square feet. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of improvements on the grounds were made. And that was one of the business decisions that I wasn't there, of course, right. but the people in charge of the museum put in place in order to make sure we had enough revenue mm-hmm. To run that new expansion.
So before you came to the museum, they had been running deficits, and I don't think this was the museum folks knew it. The Board of Governors knew it. I don't think the general community really knew it. You weren't hiding it. It was just the media, the Indianapolis Star. Nobody went around and said that the museum had some deficit issues in the fiscal year ending June 2012, a year before you got here. The museum was running a deficit of $20 million. And then just 2 months before you got here, in June of 2013, they were running a $9 million deficit. Are these deficits, Matt Gutwine, one of the reasons for having to now institute an admission charge?
Sure. No question about it. If we're going to be in existence, if we're going to be able to continue the 130-year tradition mm-hmm. of having a museum available to our community, we have to be fiscally sound, or there isn't going to be a museum here. But the decisions are even broader than that. Mm-hmm. And I would just want to follow up with something that Charles said to really emphasize it, which is that people say that the museum's been free, but it's not quite accurate. It's not been free. So if you go out there today and you want to see the Georgia O'Keeffe exhibit, okay. You're going to pay $20 to get into that exhibit.
It was a special exhibition.
And you're going to pay $5 for parking. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do some other activities, you're going to pay for those too. Mm-hmm. And most of our guests, they come for these exhibits. And so you'd be paying $25 or even $30 now. And it's always been that way. Mm-hmm. And so, So I realize that people are concerned that all of a sudden now we're charging when it seemed like we weren't before, mm-hmm. but we were before. But this is a, we believe, a simpler and easier and better way to charge than the way we've been doing it for decades.
Is it fair to say that the museum is adopting what Disneyland and Disney World eventually adopted, which I think they started at one price and you can ride all the rides till the cows come home. Kings Island has the same thing. I think all of the amusements have the same thing, as opposed to you get in for a dollar and then you got to pay this for parking. You got to pay this to see Mickey stand in a special thing. Is that kind of what you all are saying?
Yes, and in the museum community, I mean, we also have a museum industry in the cultural world. And basically what we're going to be going to in April is the standard of what most museums in this country do. Well over 60% of museums do charge a general admission rather than this piecemeal pricing for bits and pieces that you add up. And in this case, for most people, the new fees will actually be less expensive if you're going there to go to particularly special exhibitions. Also something that, because the price part is what everybody gets emotional about, and mm-hmm. one certainly understands that. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to pay for something they think they used to get for free. However, we're really working on, this is not something that's only about today and April and next year. We're really working on a 10-year to 20-year plan for the IMA. Part of it is for us to be very financially stable mm-hmm. And to be able to grow and flourish, not just survive in the future, but more importantly, to really be able to continue to invest on our site and in the community. And really to become a destination campus is what we're saying, more than just being thought of as a standalone museum, or if you like gardens, just the gardens or the park, mm-hmm. but really have that broad, much more broadly known in the community, where people might want to come and spend a whole day at the museum doing all these things. Right now, I don't think we've done great communication over the last decade telling people how many amazing things you can do both indoor and out at the IMA.
Let me go to some questions about process in this whole thing. And the disadvantage or the advantage of being around 40 years in community servant leadership in this city and having the gray hair is having been a part of discussions similar to what you all probably had internally. When the zoo moved from their clunky location in Washington Park down to the White River State Park going into 1988, the zoo had some decisions to make, and they knew they had to raise the price of admission because this was a brand new zoo, and the difference between the old zoo and the new zoo is the difference between an old Yugo and a Lexus. I mean, it was that kind of difference. And there were discussions, and there was outreach, to community leadership of all stripes as to what should we do, what should the price points be. They were even wrestling with, are we an educational institution or a museum, or are we Kings Island? And I had to tell them, you're getting ready to start charging $13, $14 to come to the zoo, and you're going to have all these you might have an educational purpose, you're a nonprofit, but doggone it, you better be like Kings Island. You got to have attractions to do things like that. And they eventually made that decision to have a lot of attractions, to have a lot of whiz-bang and what have you, as well as the education and the conservatory pieces that they do. The Children's Museum in 1990 had some very stressful conversations with people in the community because they were free. And there were some difficult conversations just for them to go to $3 and $5 in 1990, which seems like maybe that ought to be the price now, because if gas is back to $2. And there were a lot of different discussions, and the Children's Museum, as part of implementing their pricing strategy, was also to implement strategies to involve the surrounding community, because they're only one of two museums in this city that are located in a majority-minority community. They're one, you're the other one. In the press release and even in some answers that you guys gave to Lou Harry with IBJ this morning, it talks about there was all this research done And I'm sure somebody got over and you did some research for you all. But what outreach was done to community leadership, particularly leadership in the African-American community, to give people a heads up? When the zoo was contemplating what they were doing, everybody knew that decision was coming. When the Children's Museum was wrestling with charging, it was not a secret. Everybody kind of knew that. I think a lot of the reaction has been this took people by surprise. What consultation was done with the minority community?
There have been, going back to the original part of your question about, yes, the museum, both in the early 2000s and then again, certainly since I've been there, late 2012, 13, and 14, there has been a lot of research done, focus groups, which include certainly members of the community, including African Americans and other minorities and majority individuals in the community. So that was certainly one thing that was done. There's 10 studies probably that the board had access to. There was a very interesting conversation two board meetings ago in which the board really wrestled with, do we want to go out and start asking the community to have input on something that is so basically a financial issue at the heart of the institution in terms of, is this really something we have a lot of leeway in terms of setting a price point, in terms of how, when we actually pull the trigger on going, moving back to charging admission or not? And so in that discussion, which I thought the board did very, very well, it ended up being decided that we should not go out overall to the community to talk specifically about what should the price point be on those kind of issues, because the board, for financial reasons, and it has the responsibility, was going to need to make that decision and put it that forward.
But were there conversations with the Urban League, with the NAACP, with Indiana Black Expo, with the neighborhood associations on, we're looking at pulling the trigger on an admission? We still don't know what the price point is going to be, what should we be concerned about if we pull that trigger?
There were not conversations based on the board discussion about that question and about charging admission.
Should there have been, given the location of your museum?
Well, I think that's a good question. And actually, going, this is something that the other part of that is the things that we do need and have the ability to have lots of input on to shape programming going forward, given that we believe we'll now have a firm financial basis and also new revenue stream to support those things. Actually, there are plans in the works and have been now for several months. And the first one was going to be late in January. We're actually going to move it up. We had a meeting this morning, January 8th. There will be a conversation in the Toby Auditorium. However, those are really about programming, amenities, what you like at the museum, what you don't like at the museum. What would you like for us to be doing that would motivate you to be a user of the museum and also members? Because I can tell you, I think you can call it an experiment if you want to, from 2007 until today, has not ended up the way that we had hoped it would be. I wasn't there in those days. Right. But the hope really was that many more people would come to the museum when we went to piecemeal pricing, where you could choose things, and that you would have many of those people fall in love with the museum, and that they would, on their own volition, become members. So we would get large numbers of members helping to support the institution. And that really has not happened. And I think the African-American community, like a lot of other communities, are a very good example of that, in that we certainly do have a broad spectrum of African-Americans who use and love the institution. But we have only 8% of our overall visitation is in the African-American community, whereas in Marion County, of course, as you certainly know, it's 27, 29, almost 30% African-Americans. And so we really think that we should have a much higher degree of programming as well that doesn't only, I think in one of your questions you said, cater to the African-American community, but really look at broader ability to get everybody to come to the institution and really come there and decide they want to be part of the IMA family because it really is meaningful to them.
So if I'm hearing you saying that your research, I want to make sure I heard this, that your research says that only 8% of the folks that come through the doors at 4000 Michigan Road are African-American.
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes it's nine, but it's nowhere near as much as we think it should be.
And granted that IMA does not have the $2 million advertising budgets of the Children's Museum and the zoo.
Correct.
And your advertising budgets have been about $576,000. Your membership dues have been $519,000. So one of the questions is, and there are no secrets in the business I'm in. And we know how much is spent in advertising, at least in our industry. And since 2009, the Indianapolis Museum of Art, granted you have a small dollars, has spent no dollars inviting the African American community to come to your great facility on the radio stations that a majority of African Americans listen to. So an argument can be, and the previous marketing agencies IMA has had, has told our staff in no uncertain terms, they have racially profiled this minority-owned business and racially profiled the community, saying your community doesn't have enough people making $75,000 or more. That, in my mind, that's racial profiling. Because if your admission was free, y'all really don't care how much is in somebody's bank account as long as they come and enjoy the art. That's just the facts of it. So with this decision that you're going to charge admission and you want to encourage more people to have memberships, and that also implies that you're going to have to ramp up your marketing budget, because when I look at your competitors, the Children's Museum spends about $2 million.
Our marketing is small compared to that.
Yeah, you're very small. But to not even invite, for all of those special exhibitions you all have had, not even to invite.
Seems like a bad plan.
Did anybody even ask, why is it 8%?
Sure. I'm asking it every day.
Matt's probably hearing this for the first time. Does the Board of Governors ever ask,
No, Amos, I'm with you. And I know Charles is too. It goes beyond just an advertising budget, right? Mm-hmm. It requires meaningful, methodical, and real outreach to the African American community and low income communities. And we have not done a good job of that at all. And that's one of the things that makes me most excited about, the approach to the future that we are committed at the IMA now, and I'm not saying anything negative about the past, not at all, but we are committed to having very meaningful programming that appeals to and is interesting for the African-American community, diverse communities, low-income populations, and engaging in real meaningful outreach, real meaningful engagement, real meaningful opportunities to get involved. And to do that, it takes resources. And this admissions policy is going to give us the resources to actually make the museum much more available, to folks who can really enjoy it.
On the resources, because there are still some confusion on your pricing policy. It's $18 for adults, $10 for children.
Yes.
And there's no discount beyond that.
No, we are using the access pass. So for persons.
Wait, hold on. The press release y'all issued a week ago said nothing about that. And I just found out before you all walked in here that there was something put on your website this morning that says 10 things you need to know about IMA's new admission policy. And you're just now saying that the Access Pass program, which was started by the Children's Museum I think 9 to 10 institutions, that now is going to be in effect. Why wasn't that said last Friday? One, why have I got to find out about it by accident? By going to Twitter and just doing a Twitter search to see what people were saying about IMA this morning, and it's all one of your staff members was starting to put out this link. Again, where's this communication with the community?
I think that's actually great question. In hindsight, I think we should have put that in that press release. We were already a member of the Access Pass program and have been for a little while. So we should have reiterated that. However, we've certainly going forward, that is becoming, we had so many questions that we hadn't answered in one press release. That's why we just posted that, and that question had come up from several people who called, so we added that in as well. And so what we will get with your access pass will change. Mm-hmm. Now you basically get access for $1 per person per visit if you mm-hmm. qualify for an access pass.
And we should tell the audience the access pass program are for households that are on TANF or food stamps. And I think one other.
Who's your health wise?
And your Medicaid. If your kids are on Who's Your Health Wise mm-hmm. and Medicaid, you fill out a form, and it's accepted at the Children's Museum at the,
they're nine institutions.
Hall of Champions, a number of it, the Idle George downtown, the Historical Society, the State Museum, and this, but you see how important that would have been last Friday.
I just say that. I think you're right.
Is it a lack of not thinking about? Was there any thought of even calling the Children's Museum at one point and saying, hey, y'all been there, done that. Here's what we're getting ready to do. We're not competing with you. Are there any, you know, danger signs we ought to be looking for in announcing this?
We have talked to the Children's Museum.
And they didn't bring up the importance of making sure that your surrounding community understood that in any kind of pricing they needed to make sure they felt welcome?
The conversation we had with them primarily revolved around their experience of doing what we're just doing now. Back mm-hmm. in 1990, right. when they went, I think, to $7 and children were three, mm-hmm. that they had, you know, very similar going from zero to a higher, and that was, you know, a lot more money in today's dollars. So we really talked to them about that experience and what kind of pushback they got, how long did it last, what kind of things that they did they tell their public. They didn't have an access pass at that time. I think it was created in 2005. And so we are a newer member to that with those other eight organizations. But it's certainly something that at the museum we're readily responding to visitors. But yes, I think, like I said, in hindsight, I think we probably certainly should have put that in
what
that press release.
What is the museum's position going to be on the third Monday of January 2016, which is the Dr. King National Holiday?
Well, we're expanding that this year. We've always.
No, I'm not talking about this year because you're still in the free. But once you get to April 2015 and the new pricing policy hits, what is your pricing going to be King Day 2016?
Well, we've had a tradition of several days. That's certainly the most prominent one of them in which we've always been free. Mm-hmm. Normally we're closed on Monday, so we've even opened the building in order mm-hmm. to help celebrate Dr. King's contribution to America. So we're continuing that, but as I was saying, we're also expanding it. We're going to be open on Sunday afternoon as well, mm-hmm. So that we can do things on that afternoon when you might be able to do that when you could easily be working on a Monday like most people. So we're actually making that a bigger sort of family-friendly event than we've done in the past, both Sunday and Monday. We'll also have some other things like that during the year.
But shouldn't the release, and even more importantly, this 10-point frequently asked question on your website, shouldn't that indicate that? Dr. King 2016?
Again, that's a good question. We have many other things, though, that you could also put in a press release. So in the end, how many things can you put in a press release that we actually have another press release that will go out on Dr. King Day that we'll be doing as well in order so everybody knows all of the details, which you couldn't possibly put into one press release, which is really about a different subject.
239-1310 with Charles Venable, the president and CEO of the Indianapolis Museum of Art, Matt Gutwein, vice chair of the IMA Board of Governors. We're talking about the new price. Before I take the break, are there African Americans in management positions at the museum?
There are.
What do they do? And the only reason I ask it is I don't know any of them. And somebody in my position in this community who has known African Americans who have been in leadership positions in the past at the museum, mm-hmm. When all of this came up, it's like, who's over there of color that's whispering in the ear saying, hey, you know, Mr. Venable, maybe, you know, did you talk to Expo? Did you talk to the radio station? Did you talk to the recorder? You know, do they know what's coming? Those kind of things.
Well, I think I should invite you over. Come on over and I'll happily introduce you.
What do they do?
Well, we have all types of things at the museum. Tariq Robbins, for example, he's one of the people who really does a lot with our community relations. He's working on new programming for the museum. He's working with our new curator, Scott Stulen. Mm-hmm. He's been at the museum quite a number of times there, certainly before I got there. Mm-hmm. He's one of the people who's really quite key to, I think, reconnecting the IMA, and probably more than it may have ever been, to our local community, as well as our neighbors. That's one of the things when I arrived here I thought was really lacking at the museum. That we seem to be spending a lot of energy outside of Indianapolis in terms of marketing, PR, and other things. I've been concerned that we don't spend enough time really talking to people here on the ground.
239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is. We'll take a break. You may have a question about all of this. Oh, yes, when I come back, I'm going to find, yes, I got to find out, do I have to pay the $18 or do I pay $17, $16 since I have gray hair? Because I don't even see that in the frequently asked questions. See, I got a lot of seniors that listen to this program who want to go to the art museum, and they need to know now, do they need to borrow money, you know, take out a loan or what have you. We'll also ask about the Thursday free afternoon. Why has it got to be on the same Thursday at the Children's Museum? Why did they start a new tradition, like second Thursday? Third Thursday. Can't do fourth Thursday because that interferes with the race. That interferes with Thanksgiving. Anyway, it's afternoons with Amos for a Friday.
Hi, this is State Representative Greg Porter, and you are listening to Indiana Broadcasters Hall of Fame inductee Amos Brown right here on 1310 The Light.
Now, I got a lot of senior citizens out here. They go to that have been to the Indianapolis Museum of Art. They know when they go to the Children's Museum that there's a discount for seniors and a discount for senior membership. What are y'all doing about seniors with this new policy?
Well, obviously, we love our seniors, too. We have, in our membership and also in our overall attendance, seniors are one of the largest group. Depending on the year, sometimes over half of our attendees are actually qualify, as I do. I'll be 55, so I'm a member of AARP, too, but qualify as senior citizens. So it's one of those things, like the Children's Museum has the issue with children. It's a big part of their audience.
Right.
And so therefore they ticket in a way so that they're also having those visits from children also be very helpful to their being able to fund their operation. Mm-hmm. And so one of the struggles we went through is, and you could do discounts all over the place for lots of groups, mm-hmm. including seniors. And so one of the long conversations we had would be, should we be discounting right off the bat one of our biggest core groups across the board that make up over half of some years our attendance, as well as even more so of our membership?
So that answer is no.
So the answer is become a member and you get all of the ultimate discount.
But is it realistic because there are a lot of people that utilize art museums, not just IMA, but art museums, either as an impulse decision to go and visit an art museum, or they're going to spend an hour, maybe 90 minutes, as opposed to going to the Children's Museum, you know, and you're spending 3, 4, 5 hours. The zoo is almost an all-day thing, you know, particularly if you got kids. Are there different factors of time of visit? You know, I would think the time of visit to an art museum is less than time of visit to a museum that has more interactivity for people. Because in an art museum, it's passive. And I'm not trying to mean that in a negative sense. But in an art museum, you're going to have the work envelop you. You can't touch it. You can't feel it. You can't spin it around. Hey, what does it look like if I turn it backwards? Is that one of the issues your industry has to deal with?
Oh, I think absolutely. And we've got more and more visitors who want to have interactive experiences. And that's one of the great challenges. And the IMA is part of the vision for the future, is moving very rapidly in those directions. And actually, the picture you painted, I think, would be the classic thing that most of our fellow citizens here would think when they think of the word museum, which sounds like an old stuffy word to begin with. Mm-hmm. So really, if you were to come there and say, see the George O'Keefe show that we have up right now, it's anything but passive. Mm-hmm. There are iPads and all kinds of technology you can use. There are things you can do on your phone. There are audio tours. You can do drawing in the middle of the galleries. And we're moving way beyond it. We are a great art museum, but we are so much more than that. People don't realize that we have gardens, that we have parks, we have grounds, we have greenhouses, we have plant collections. And so getting people to think gosh, I'm not just going to pop over there for 30 minutes during the day, but more like you might visit the zoo, I'm going to go over for an entire Sunday afternoon and have a cup of tea and get a sandwich and also be able to spend time outside with my kids or grandkids and on the inside. It's something that shows you that we need to do much better in our marketing and communications to this community.
Let me go to JL at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, I'm just thirsty to recognize my boy. Good afternoon to you and your guest. You know, I have owned an art gallery with traditional early African-American artists. I have never been invited to be a part of anything that they're doing in terms of, you know, as a representative. I'm talking about major African-American artists, John Weston Hartley, Gail Wicker, William Scott, and William Majors were they, and I've done exhibits. Here's my point in case, is that I think that they need to start back with consultant curator, where they had the opportunity to bring in your a work of art that you were trying to discover who the artist was and charge a fee. Major museums across the nation is doing that, and the museums stopped doing that. I don't know why, because they said something about liability, but still, those major museums in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles are still doing that for the community. I think they need to bring that back as a way of bringing in revenue. And also, there needs to be more exhibits as it relates to the African-American experience here in America. And I know they're trying to get away from calling it African-American, just saying, you know, as an artist. However, that's not being done. I mean, I think they need to do more of that. And I think it needs to start at a very early age where people can understand what a museum is about. It's expressing the culture. It's exposing the culture of a people. And I think that's a missing link. And this city needs to invest in that to help where there's not discernible, it's not running into a problem with finances, because it is a very valuable part of one's understanding of who he or she might be is from that cultural experience that's expressed in the art. So once again, I'd like to know, who are some of the black folks that are sitting at the table and making some of these? I've never been invited, and I've been an owner of a African-American gallery. I've never been invited to the table. So I'd love to hear who are these people.
All right, and what was the JL? What was the concept that you talked about? What kind of curator?
Ask the curator.
Ask the curator. Okay, I'm sorry.
Thing what was called. All right, consult the curator.
All right, Charles Venable, first of all, is that something other museums are doing? And if so, why can't we?
Well, it's certainly something that a lot of museums used to do. I've been at the IMA 2 years, and we haven't done it. I think it was stopped before then. That's an interesting thing that the caller, who I agree with a lot, I mean, a really smart user of art museums and clearly knows a lot about art, so I agree with all of his points. That is a program that a lot of museums did stop. I don't know if that's the reason the IMA did. Some people were using.
I know there has been criticism over the years of IMA, and this is even before the expansion, that IMA showed no love to artists from Indiana. It had nothing to do with color. It was like, oh, if it's from Indiana, it can't be that great unless it's the love statue. So we've got to go out and get a Renoir and all these other people from out of town. And local artists felt that there was no love. And Matt's nodding his head because he's heard that lot. What is the museum?
I've heard it my whole career.
What is the museum doing to try to uplift? I mean, they're uplifting. If people make beer in Indiana, they're uplifting it. If you make jewelry in Indiana, somebody's uplifting it. What is IMA doing to uplift folk that are here?
Well, last week, for example, last Thursday, we had something called the Monster Drawing Rally, and we had 35 local artists who came to the IMA. Were seated very prominently in our main front pavilion, the Ephraimson Family Pavilion, and they were drawing for the public, and then their work was put up, and the public could buy their work right there, giving all those artists exposures. So that's part of a one little program, though very successful one, that's part of this whole new range of programming that's really meant to engage the community on a broader level, and a much wider group of people that our new curator, Scott Stulen, is doing there. And then the other thing, just because your caller brought it up, was exposing children at early age to art, particularly since so many of our schools don't do that very much anymore. We consider that quite key at the IMA. And so we have programs for toddlers. We have now programs for camps in the summer, which the museum used not to have. Now we have 300 or 400 kids in the summer coming to art camp. People can drop their kids off and come up to the museum. And you'll see in January we're going to roll out even some more programs that are hopefully going to be very successful, focusing on mainly children who've grown up in poverty, who really need the help that we can give them for educational purposes.
Matt Gunwine says it sounds like the Board of Governors was intimately involved in all of this. I'm going to ask you this question. Mr. Venom, I'm going to ask you, where is the fairness that if there is a resident of Marion County attending IU in Bloomington or DePauw in Greencastle or Ball State in Muncie, Marion County resident attending those schools, they have to pay to get in. But a resident of Greencastle who's attending Butler, or a resident of Lagodi who is attending IUPUI, can get in the museum free because they're attending a four-year college in Marion County. What is the fairness of that?
Well, again,
do y'all even think of that ramification?
Sure.
Sure. No question about it. And again, we wanted to provide broad access for those students who are going to college here so they can use the museum as part of her or his college experience, including their coursework and their education and their studies. That's not so practical when you are either in Bloomington or maybe you're even going to college in California or New York, which a lot of our residents do. But I hear your point, and I just want to emphasize this overall, which is that we are hoping this new pricing strategy is successful in giving us the resources to have the kind of broad outreach and expansion of programming that JL talked about, which, by the way, I really agree with his comments. His comments are extremely consistent with the direction the museum is going. But all of us at the board who endorse this policy recognize this is a work in progress. And so if it makes sense in the future to offer discounted pricing or some kind of special pricing for students in Bloomington or Evansville or Lafayette, we're not done with this yet. So there's flexibility here, and we're going to work through it.
Is there also, given that Ivy Tech is now a true community college system, and Ivy Tech increasingly is the feeder school for IUPUI and Ball State and Indiana State, why wouldn't Ivy Tech, which is supported by the taxpayers of this state, be the only college that would be included? Use all the pricing policy specifically said 4 year, and it looked like y'all were just slapping Ivy Tech. And I'm sure when, you know, Matt Gutwein, if you see President Snyder of Ivy Tech, he's going to call you out about that.
Oh, actually, Ivy Tech is included. That was one of those things, I think, too, that should have been mentioned in the press release, because we were focusing on the majority of them, which are 4 year schools.
So Ivy Tech is included
for the Marion County campuses. Yes.
239-1310. Back to the phones in D. Hi there.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. You're kind of touching on what I was calling about. I am an online art student, and I found that some of the books that were required for some of my courses were available at the IMA library. And that's only accessible by appointment. So in that case, you have to pay, make the appointment, pay to get in just to look at the book for an hour?
No would be the answer to that. No, if you have an appointment with our library, you would go right back like anybody having an appointment in an office at the IMA. So you wouldn't have to do that. But I'm glad you're a user of our library. That's a great example, though. Our library used to be open regular hours. And as we've gone through the sort of issues with finances at the museum, started way back in 2007. So one of the hard decisions I had to make not long after I arrived was to to be able to trim staff so that we could continue to have a library, but now it's only open by appointment. So by having more income, we would hope that your life would be easier in the not too distant future by being able to have more regular library hours. But those are just a fact of cutting millions of dollars out of our budgets, and also 130 some odd staff have left the museum since 2008-09.
All right, that's a great question, Dee. Appreciate that. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me go to Raymond. Hi, Raymond.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question because I grew up 9 blocks from the IMA, and I've always wondered. I know it seems a bit exclusive, if you will, and I know that's not your intention, or I know some people will say uppity or maybe excluded from, but with you now adding the price to the museum, and with all of the other places doing like art fairs, art shows, and First Fridays and so forth, won't that even exclude more like the community I grew up in, where I went to one of the art fairs, you had the Penrod, mm-hmm. and the demographics there was maybe 90-10, and I'm wondering, will that exclude you a bit more from the overall community, or had you planned to do some like community open house before you start the pay program?
Oh, absolutely. There actually will be, we'll be getting all of those dates out fairly quickly. We have, for example, I think 4 family days planned before April. So those are going to be days. It'll be very family friendly for singles as well as for, you know, grandparents, if you will, who can come down, experience the museum. And I think you have a brilliant question or response, simply because we have so many people like you who go by that institution. The trees sort of obscure lots of the parking mm-hmm. lot. You don't even know it's there until you clip past our gate. And then when you see it, if you driving down 38th Street, you really can't tell that it's an art museum necessarily. It looks like a big office building or something from the architecture. So figuring out what we can do on the perimeter, how can we be more inviting? But certainly when you come in that front door, we want to be the most welcoming institution you could ever walk into. So I'm really appreciate your call, and hope that you'll come down during the holiday season or earlier to really see what you might like at the museum.
I appreciate the call. 239-1310.
Can I even add something more to Charles's point? Because I agree with Raymond entirely. I do think so many people feel that the IMA is sort of an exclusive place, and that is a principal focus of the future, is constant engagement with the community, outreach to the community, to have great programming that people actually want to come and enjoy. And so part of that is actually getting outside those 4 walls, getting physically outside the 4 walls. So I hope I can announce this. I hope this is public, which is we're actually going to have an IMA mobile truck, a mobile art museum that goes to neighborhood fairs and block parties and all over our city, and takes the IMA experience into communities, into
like
neighborhoods.
Like a bookmobile.
Like a bookmobile, except it's an art mobile. And so a much more outreach, much more accessibility, much more involving the community, because that's what you have to do.
Walk me through these grounds, because, I don't want to get the PR firm in trouble to put out the press release, because I know them and I love them and they're a great company, but, you know, they could have put the map out last Friday for me to look at the map and try to understand this and some pictures, because I'm confused as to what part of the grounds you can just walk on and not pay anything and what part goes in. So
sure.
Once April comes, you go in the main door, the fancy main glass doors with the revolving door in, I guess, the Ephraimson family endowed that. That's the checkpoint for pay your money, show your membership card, and get in.
Well, that's certainly where the Welcome Center is. To go back to the bigger picture, though, about the grounds.
Yeah.
We have 152 acres. We're one of the largest museums in the country. So,
in terms of acreage.
Of acreage. And scale of our main building, too, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so for over 2/3 of our acreage, nothing will change, because there's 100 acres in our park where people walk and bike and walk.
Now, that's
their dog.
The park where the parking lot is if you go west on 38th
yes,
Street.
Yes, it's the next entry.
And it says, is that the entry off of 38th Street, or is that where you go like you're going down? It's not White River Parkway, but is that other street where you kind of go where the old River
It's down by the canal.
Down by the canal, so, and there's this parking lot and some odd art. Is that what we're talking?
That's great art, Amos.
Contemporary art. Famous contemporary art.
That enters into this grand...
That's the Virginia B. Fairbanks Park. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people call it 100 acres.
Right.
It's where the 35-acre lake is and the swing sets for kids. And we have a welcome center down there as well. And lots of art that you reference. So mm-hmm. there's 100 acres there. And then the mall out in front of the building where lots of people like to picnic because we have the Love Sculpture and other things. That's all available and open.
Okay.
If you want to go to the main gardens, mm-hmm. Kind of behind the main building, as well as the main art museum and exhibitions, those are what we're asking you to come into the Welcome Center and buy a ticket. Or we're really asking you to, if you're not a member, become a member so you can come there any day for any length of time for a very reasonable amount of money.
Well, I realize you're looking at for memberships for 12 years. Any thought of a 3-month membership? Kind of, you know, the introductory price?
No, that's an interesting idea. I mean, but certainly we'll be perfecting this over time. It's not just engraved in stone. We want to do the best we can by this community, and I'm sure we'll be tweaking this as we go.
Let me go to Jason right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, I had a question. Will you guys be offering, like, membership prices or discounted membership prices for some of the major corporations in Indianapolis, like, if you work for Eskenazi or if you work for AT&T or anything like that? Because I know, like, the YMCA and different organizations do offer membership pricing and discount membership pricing for organizations.
Well, since we have the head of Eskenazi with us, he called him out.
That was great. I love it.
He can answer part of that. But the answer is we will be doing all kinds of membership drives going forward with special deals, if you will, here and there throughout the year. Depending on what company you might work for, Lilly, which has about 13,000 employees or more in this area, we're already in conversation with them. They're one of those great companies, and some of the bigger ones are like it, where they even will match your membership, so you might pay 50% of it, mm-hmm. and then they would match the other one. That's really a powerful thing to get more people to enjoy the museum.
All right, that's a great question. And Matt Gutwein turned several shades of. you got to go back there and figure all that out. All those great Eskenazi employees. Anyway, 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoon News. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with Charles Venable, the CEO of the Indianapolis Museum of Art, around 130 years, and Matt Gutwein, Vice Chair of the Board of Governors. It's Afternoon News with Amos after these.
Hello, this is King Ro Conley, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Is it fair to say, Charles Venable, that unlike the Children's Museum, that is all, it seems like every 3 months they got something going, and they're telling people, hey, we got something going at the Children's Museum because you see the ads for it. The same with the zoo. The zoo announces today, hey, we're borrowing two animals from Australia.
Well, koalas.
Well, we know what the billboards and the ads are going to be. I see that coming. Is the challenge for IMA coming up with exciting things every 2 or 3 months to say, hey, look at us, we got something new and shiny? Or is it educating what everything that's in the house?
We actually do have things coming up every month. I mean, mm-hmm. our biggest challenge is that we have not, I think, spent enough on marketing and enough on community communication mm-hmm. to tell a broad group of people across this entire city that we have all of these things if you would like to come and avail yourself of them. So we have this incredibly rich program, but we haven't been very good at getting the word out. We've been spending most of our marketing budget and time talking about special exhibitions, and sometimes that's worthwhile, like the Dream Car exhibition we have that opens in May.
This is going to be arty cars?
These are going to be some of the most extraordinary automobiles anybody's ever seen. They're all
you. You're going to get Jay Leno to come and sit in one of these cars?
I would love to have Jay Leno's.
But not at Jay Leno's price.
I want Jay Leno's Duesenberg that used to be in the garage at the mm-hmm. Lily House over mm-hmm. there. But those are the kind. That'll be a very broad audience that will come to that. But we've also got to be able to tell you that we do things for toddlers. We do things for teenagers. We do great, you know, performances, all kinds of stuff. We're an extraordinary facility. We just haven't told the community that.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
It comes to my mind the fact that we here in our city have gone through a lot of crime lately, and there still is quite a bit. I just hope that, and I say this because I've seen in other places where the prices are up, there's more security, trying to keep things safe. You can understand that. I just hope that this isn't what some of this may be, you know, going on with the price situation, because you know, you can, it can be an employee, it can be anybody that will do harm to people, and that just came to my mind.
You know, and I see your point. Sometimes people, you know, in the environment, there may be people, Charles Venable and Matt Gutwine, saying they're just doing this because they really don't want us in there, and if this is a screening to screen, they're putting a price to screen out.
Well, no, I'm not saying us, but people that will.
I understand. I completely
do harm to people, and it's like, well, if they don't, you know, if they're the poor, if they don't have much money, or you know, we'll jack up, we'll charge, and that way they can't get in.
How do you deal with that perception that may be out there, Matt?
Well,
I'm sorry, I was
just going to say, you know, museums, particularly in the art part of what we do, which is what now most people think about, the fact that we have very valuable art from all over the world there, and we have a lot of security staff and guards and cameras to keep all of that safe, it's very off-putting to a lot of people, no matter what your background is. So that's one of the challenges, I think, to be more welcoming, to be less obvious and overt about there are people there to keep the art primarily and certainly our visitors safe. But the intent of being able to develop revenue streams and really becoming a partner with the Children's Museum as far as the access pass is concerned and doing free days and events at the museum, that's of course the exact opposite, which is we're really trying to open the doors quite widely and be supporting of all of the ability to do that in a financially secure way, but we want everybody there.
Any thought of doing a different Thursday than first Thursday?
It's a good question. We did think about that. One of the things that I think most people probably wouldn't realize until they sort of think about how old are your kids when you would take them probably to a museum or a botanical garden? They tend to be a bit older. Mm-hmm. So the Children's Museum, and we work with them to some degree on this, they tend to really cater to somewhat younger families with younger kids. We tend to pick them up when they're like 6 to 7 years old and even into their teen years there. And so we're only open on Thursday evening, so it had to be a Thursday. And in the end, after talking to quite a number of visitors, we decided that people knew that First Thursdays was something that they could go do, and once they sort of grow out of the Children's Museum with their family, it would be the first Thursday that they have built their life around to kind of pick up and come to a different place.
Two final questions. One, have the number of field trips by schools gone down with this whole, if it ain't on the I-STEP test, when, you know, if we take a field trip to the art museum, as beneficial as it is, we're taking instructional time away from the test, or all the field trips crammed after I-STEP is over with from April and May?
Unfortunately, over the last, and I've been doing this 30-something years, over the last 20 years, field trips all across the country as schools were squeezed for budgets and testing became so paramount, field trips anywhere, and certainly to museums and gardens have gone down to the point that we actually have a fund that we try to get donations for where we will try to underwrite the buses to bring kids there because the schools will no longer pay for that often. So it's one of the reasons that we made sure that when we had to make this decision about pricing that school trips for Marion County kids are absolutely something that are, you know, free.
I saw a comment from somebody that's homeschooling. And, you know, this is in, you came from Kentucky, so, and I know the homeschooling's big down there, homeschooling is big here. Any thought of, if you know somebody's a licensed homeschooler, you know, showing them some love?
Oh, I think, you know, we care about those people too, obviously. One of the things that we have a challenge with, because right now you just walk in the door or walk on the property and we really don't have a chance to talk to you. We really right now have no idea how many people like that are actually using the museum.
Okay.
And so as, we were commenting earlier, we're going to be working and perfecting this. So I would encourage anybody who's a homeschooling their children when they come there to the welcome desk to really tell us that they've got their kids there for a reason, they're doing studies. We'd love to learn that and figure out, is that a niche that we really need to do something special for going forward?
All right. And you can, if you want more information on the Indianapolis Museum of Art, of course, they got a website. at Indianapolis, at imamuseum.org, imamuseum.org. Matt Gutwein is always good to see. He's going to be working on that thing for Eskenazi and health and hospital employees. See, you can be, you can show leadership. Just like Eskenazi showed leadership and minority engagement and involvement in the hospital, so you could provide leadership there. And Charles Venable, the president and CEO of the Indianapolis Museum of Art, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.